Hey, this is Nick from BJJ Pandas.
This is Vic.
And we are back. So, hey, if you're listening for the first time, just thank you for coming and joining us. Appreciate that. If you've been a listener since the beginning, gonna make a slight apology. We took a break. So, last episode you heard was back in April. Now we are in September, almost October, and we haven't been able to really produce a whole lot of content for you. So, a lot of things going on. This episode number... whatever the number is. It was uploaded today. I think it's like 32.
Something like that.
Actually walks through why we haven't been around and talks about the journey that we've had as we go through. So if you're new to the podcast, welcome. Hopefully you enjoyed it. It's an amazing podcast. Lots of cool stuff. If you've been listening forever, guys, we love you. Thank you so much for listening. I've heard you. I've been getting messages and people telling me, where's the podcast? I miss Monday mornings. We're back. We are absolutely back and back for at least the duration. So we do have, you'll notice a little bit of an audio degradation. If you listen to some of the original content, it sounds like complete shit. And then if you listen to like episode 4 through something, it sounds much better. And then if you listen to, at some point, the episodes, they sound really, really good. And now we're kind of back to the much better stage because my board broke.
We'll get it back.
If I had that board, I'd make like a wah, wah, wah. So yeah. I don't have that board. So hopefully we're going to get that back here pretty soon, and the audio quality will go back to where it was. But the content has always been amazing.
Yeah. So welcome back, guys.
Welcome back. Hey, real quick, just want to plug a couple of things we have going on. So do want to just give a shout out to Triple Crown MMA. So that's the gym that both Vic and I train out of under Jordan Sullivan. So really excited to be there. But do want to do a couple of shameless promotional plugs.
Yeah, I have to. Got to.
All right. Well, as long as you guys are okay with it. Not going to be like a JRE episode where I plug everything in the entire world. Well, not everything.
Yeah.
So BJJ Pandas. Guys, you all had inspired me to start a line of gis and no-gi wear. My wife also started Shadow Realm BJJ with Elisa Hampton, so super excited. We have a full line of gear. So we have gis, we have rash guards, we have shorts.
The whole shebang.
Everything. You want it, we got it. Well, not everything.
Not most.
Just
most
about
things.
Everything. Just about anything. Okay. We do patches, we do shirts, we do hoodies, hats. Pretty much whatever you'd want if you're practicing BJJ.
We have slides.
We have slides. We don't really have slides.
Well, we can't... Working on.
I tried them. They weren't great. I don't want to sell them. We're good.
We're working it out.
We're also working on boxing gloves and shin guards for our striking fans. A lot of cool stuff. If you head over to bjjpandas.com, you're going to see a great website that actually has a bunch of links. One of those links is to all the previous podcasts. You'll be able to see those. There's also a link to our gear. So if you click on products, you can go to bjjpandasgear.com/store, which is a lot to remember. So just go to bjjpandas.com. And you'll be able to see a full line of all the different products that we offer. You can pick them up in person if you're in the tri-state, Kentucky, Cincinnati area. Or you can get them sent to you because we ship. So that's certainly a thing. Credit card, PayPal, whatever you want to use. And guys, we are so excited to be back. I'm excited. We have this BJJ Pandas line, Shadow Realm line of gear that is going out all over the country. We have schools that are supporting the line throughout the country by using us as their provider of their gear for their academies. And we have them all over here in Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, all over the place. So we are everywhere, and we're really, really excited. The other thing I'd ask, and I think Vic asks more than I do, is if you want to share your story, let us know. Go on to bjjpandas.com, click the contact us, shoot me a message on Instagram, shoot me a message on Facebook, BJJ Pandas, Shadow Realm, BJJ, either one, and click, like it, follow us. Do all the things you do on social media, and we're going to grow this thing to be huge.
So we want your story.
We do. I want your story. Vic wants your story. Our audience wants your story.
We all want it.
Everybody wants to hear your journey. Guys, so with that, hopefully you enjoy the episodes. Let us know what you think, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Hey, man, listen. People have gems they will give you if you just listen. Mm-hmm. You know, and so this whole community has taught me, like, if anybody wants to teach you something, be a white belt. You know, be a white belt in any modality.
And welcome back to BJJ Pandas Story on the Mat. I'm Nick.
I'm Vic.
And today we have a guest with us that has tried to come on our show forever, and as a complete dick, which is me, ignored him. So I'd like to formally introduce and welcome Mr. Dylan Vowell.
Hey, Dylan, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So, so Dylan reached out to me and said, and we kept hinting towards it, right? That I'd love to be on the podcast. Like, it's a great show, and he's been a huge supporter. And I suck at picking up hints, by the way. So if anybody doesn't know that, so one day he outwardly asked me. He said, "So when can I be on the show?" I'm like, "Whenever you want." He's like, "Okay, cool." I was like, "Yeah, just text me." And he's like, "All right, cool." And he did, and I just ADD brain kicked in and forgot about everything. And that was last week, I think. You're like, "So how's the podcast?" And I said, "Oh yeah, well yeah, whenever you want to be on, just let me know." He's like, "I did." I was like, "Oh, well, I suck at life. All right, cool." So if anybody else has reached out to me, because I know there's like two other people that I did the same thing to. So I love Dylan. It's nothing against you at all. It's completely
against
on
Dylan.
Me. Well, that one was against Dylan, but totally on me. Absolutely 100%. I've got just so much crap going on that I probably need to calm down a little bit, but I forgot. So
now you're a busy man.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm excited to have you here. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I'm happy to be here.
So a couple of things to start off the show. Number one, I want to announce the Kumite. So if you heard in the intro, we have the Kumite coming up May 1st. So if you're in the Cincinnati area or anywhere in the tri-state area, hell, within a couple hours, it's going to be an awesome show. I think it's $35 for entry tickets, which gets you into the venue. If you want a seat, an actual seat to sit down throughout the fight, I think it's $50, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
Well worth either side of that. So it's a nice theater. So it'd be a pretty cool place, regardless if you're sitting or standing and kind of milling around and hanging out. On stage, they do a lot of cool stuff. We're going to have a whole booth set up that will have t-shirts and gis and rash guards and shorts there to sell. So you can check out the merchandise, actually see it, touch it, feel it. Not many places you can go and feel a gi before you buy it, which is pretty cool. So we'll be set up there and we're going to have a good time. Vic's actually competing.
Yep.
In the Kumite. So I say all that not to promote what we got going on. I mean, that was cool too, but
he's promoting it.
I just want to set the tone for this particular episode. So I'm going to give you guys some insight into the world of fighting, jiu-jitsu, and then general just fat life. So my wife right now is started keto about two days ago, and she's struggling. She's a massive struggle bus. Like, emotion super high. All she wants to do is eat like food and good food. And of course, if you've ever done keto, you know that it's pretty hard to eat good food because, well, shit, carbs are good and you can't eat those. Vic's getting ready for the Kumite in a week. So it's this Sunday and he's cutting weight. So he's drinking lots of water. And of course, the season just changed. So he's got the sniffles. So he's just a hot mess right now.
I'm going through it, y'all.
And Dylan's actually getting ready for a fight also. He's probably the happiest out of all of us, but he's got the longest way to go. So I think you're doing a crazy weight cut, specifically a water cut at the end, right?
Yeah. It's not that crazy of a weight cut, but it's going to be 12 to 15 pounds.
12 to 15 yeah. pounds. And he's been working his ass off in the gym for the last, God, I mean, it feels like it's been months at this point because you went fight and then right into camp almost.
I injured my shoulder. Yeah. I had a frayed labrum from hitting the bag, ripping meat hooks to the bag. Just destroying that bag. But yeah, unfortunately, I paid for that. I don't know really what happened. I think I just exacerbated an old injury. So then, yeah, obviously, probably about a month off, just trying to just recover, and then like slowly dribbling back into the gym. And then once I felt like it was really good to go to start throwing the meat hooks again then.
So you've been in camp other than 1 month or a month and a half. You've been in camp for like 6 months at this point.
Yeah.
So just setting the tone there. Yeah, you know, frame of mind. We're all a little on edge. I am just fat and loving every minute of it. But I'm also trying to be supportive in the keto thing. So I'm cutting way back on the carbs. But I've done that about 100 times. So. And then Dylan brought donuts as an awesome thank you that any other situation would have been perfect because our house loves donuts.
Hey, it's Sunday, man. You know,
it was a little different. So we're going to start off. Let's just start background, right? So I know. So we'll start with height, weight, rank in jiu-jitsu. We'll start there and kind of see where this goes.
I am 5'9" and a half. Half is important.
You know, whenever anybody's under like 5'10" or 6 foot, it's always the incremental inches, right?
Yeah.
5'9" and a half.
It's important.
Vic, how tall are you?
5'8" and a half.
That's exactly right. So I'm 6 foot. I don't know if it's a half on either side.
Yeah, I wish I was like 5'10", because then I could maybe stretch out and say that I'm 6 foot. You know?
I think that's what Logan does.
5'9", you can't.
Now, Logan's straight. I mean, Logan's as tall as I am. He's straight 6 foot.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh, he's all as tall as I am.
Fucking short.
Yeah, you are. You really are. Yeah, along with the Brazilian blood that gives you extra testosterone and extra steroids, you get the shortness. That's just part of life, so. All right, so
yeah, 5'9", right now floating around the low 70s. So obviously going into the weight cut and stuff, we're.
So for those that aren't catching that, it's 170 pounds.
Yeah. Yep. Well, yeah, basically 170 pounds. I'll be fighting at 155.
Yeah. So that is that weight cut. That's, yeah, that's deep.
Yeah. It's not terrible. I did the same thing last fight. But last fight was at 170.
And so for those that don't know, so it's an MMA fight.
Yes.
Yeah. So not just straight jiu-jitsu, but actual MMA.
Yes.
I think that's pretty common in the MMA community. I know we sponsor Jeremy Pender, mm-hmm. Marissa Pender. I think he had a huge weight cut and he's tiny to begin with. So to cut, I mean, to me, to lose 15 pounds in a week or, you know, whatever the weight cut is, I know it's all water, but it's still, it's an audacious task. Like, it sucks.
It seems like it until you do it. And then you realize the mechanism of how it works. And it's fairly simple. The only hard day is weigh-in day. Cause that's like no water. And, yeah, and you're just kind of waiting to get on the scale. It's just a kind of a long drawn out day.
Well, how old are you?
27.
So that's the difference, right? So I think this is the thing I've seen happen and it's interesting. In fact, it happened to a friend of mine just the other day where they were going to do a weight cut. And to your point, like you know, you've been in competitions, you've done weight cuts before, you know what that environment's like, you know what the steps are. But all of a sudden you hit a certain age and the whole game changes, but it doesn't tell you it changes. You don't find out until you get to that last day and you're like, fuck, I still got another 3 pounds to go and I've done like Epsom salt baths, like, yeah, everything. When we did the Naga, I was scared shit. Like I thought for sure I wasn't going to make weight. And if I didn't, I was going to be at the very, very, very bottom of the great big no limit motherfuckers. Like I was going to be 250 in a weight class that probably went up to 400 pounds. Like, it was crazy.
That would have been cool.
Oh my God. I was so nervous. Like I was super scared. And then of course, then I'm thinking, well, shit, I'm doing all this and then I'm not going to have anybody in my bracket. Right? Like I'm going to be this. So then it's, all do right. I fight up a belt or do I fight up a weight class? And I'm like, yeah, I'll go mess with purple belts for him and go play with those great big mountain people. But anyway, so for you, white belt in jiu-jitsu?
Yes, white belt, no stripes.
Sandbagging.
I don't even deserve a gi.
So I'm going to say this is like Gordon Ryan. Been training for like 6, 7 years, 8 years, 10 years, and like top in his class and still a white belt. It's like bullshit.
Yeah. Nah, he's a white belt.
So I think similar, right? Like you've got a ton of training and you think about the training that you do is intense training. Yeah. It's not like your basic come in on Tuesdays and Thursdays and I do the drill and then I go home. Like you come in and you're in a full sauna suit and you're doing warm ups. You're like dripping wet.
And you're trying to beat my ass.
Well, that's later. Yeah. and then skipping rope and then you're into kickboxing drills and boxing drills and then into jiu-jitsu rolling with everybody that's been there. So it's not your typical, you know, training.
Oh, I'm a zero stripe white belt. Bullshit. You ain't.
Yeah. I'll tell you, so the Gordon Ryan thing, that was funny. That was
That was really funny, especially when he put the parts in Portuguese. I was dying.
Well, so I'm part of a Facebook group, and in that Facebook group, there were people that literally thought it was real. Like they thought it was some random guy who was just getting promoted. There's all these stupid comments like, "Oh, what's he gonna get a coral belt in 72 hours?"
It's like the old school Taekwondo thing where you could buy a black belt.
Yeah, you can go on Amazon and get it. Hell, I'll sell you one if you really want it.
Yeah,
you're gonna get your ass kicked, but that's cool. You play whatever game you want to play. But I think, you know, there's a lot of people that, because gi is more akin to MMA, and I think MMA is what gets a lot of people started.
No gi. Yeah.
Is more akin to MMA, and that's what get people in the door. Right. They want to be an MMA fighter. They see UFC fights. They hear things like that. So they're more interested in gi or no gi. And I think there's even a conversation. I think it was Gordon Ryan, or it might have been, I forget. Anyway, they were talking about how the gi is dead and the gi is dying. I think it's an ongoing conversation.
It is. It's between Gordon Ryan and literally every other jiu-jitsu practitioner.
Yeah, and I think this is just my opinion, right? I'm a nobody in this sport, but my opinion is that they both have validity. And I was having this conversation today, actually. I was doing a lesson with these two people, and we're talking about gi and no gi. Do they like gi or no gi better? And they said they like one better, and they said, well, I think gi isn't as practical as no gi is. And I'm like, well, if you think about it, like I've got shorts on. If I want to control Victor's hips, I'm going to do that by grabbing the cord of his pants in gi and lock down with my elbow. Like it's a really effective way to control. Well, my drawstring shorts have a cord. It's got the same thing. So I think there's validity in both. Certainly understanding MMA, however, if you're actually going to compete, there's not much clothes. Hell, most of those guys are wearing their underbritches out there, right? Like there is not a lot of clothing to get started. So I totally get the gi to no gi. I do get excited about the prospect of you putting a gi on, though.
I me too. I don't want to do it in lieu of training for a fight.
No, so, that's very fair.
Right. And so I am very antsy to get one on because, man, back before the whole reaction to the virus and all that.
The vid.
The vid. everybody shutting down and stuff like that. I had been coming in more and more frequently to a class here and there. I wasn't, this is why I have no stripes, by the way, is because I understood it. I felt like anyway, is that if you're not showing up consistently to classes, you're probably not going to get a stripe, right? And you're probably not going to show enough for someone to see that you deserve a stripe, even though you wrestled, you know, even though like I'm good enough to like hold my own ish, you know, and I just don't know the steps, and that's what it's all about. You got to have certain steps. You got to be able to pass. You got to be able to show that you can make these transitions that are, you know, befitting of somebody with a stripe or a blue belt, you know.
I think that's interesting. There was actually a conversation I was having with Sean Snyder the other day, and there's gyms out there that don't even give you a white belt day one. Like you have to earn a white belt. And he said that he kind of liked it. I said, I think that's bullshit. Like, I think that, you know, when I buy my $80 elite gi from Amazon and it comes with a white belt, I should be able to put it on.
Yeah.
Because at that point, all it's doing is closing my gi. Like, it's keeping my gi closed for a half a minute, right?
Sure.
I think that first stripe is exactly what you just described, though. Mm. That's the consistency. Okay, this person actually wants to learn how to do this sport.
Mm-hmm.
So they get a stripe, and that's the, hey, yep, you're consistently showing up, you're doing the thing. And then the second stripe is, all right, you actually are progressing. We're seeing some kind of increase in skill and mobility.
Right.
And then your third stripe, and then it goes on from there. But I think that's a really good point, is that even if you have the aptitude, if you don't have the consistency or the mindset, the mental mindset for the game, you're not going to get ranked.
Well, I could be a college wrestler and a white belt and come in and think I deserve four stripes or a blue belt, and that might be true. Control wise, body awareness, all that jazz, right? Yeah. But you might say as an instructor, can you show me a shrimp? And I'd be lost, right?
I think, you know, it's really
that's
interesting.
That's kind of the point.
So Jake, a good friend of yours, and you guys train a lot together, he's a D1 wrestler, like an amazing wrestler.
Not D1.
Well, I thought he was
D1. No.
All right, well, so Dylan.
College wrestler.
College. He came from like one of the best states in wrestling or something, didn't he? Wisconsin or some crazy shit?
No. He wrestled here.
Where did he? Did he go to high school there or something?
He wrestled here in Kentucky.
Really?
Yeah, he was placed in state, stuff like that.
Okay,
he was very competitive. And out here, it's being neighbors of Ohio and stuff. He was facing some serious competition.
Yeah, some good guys.
Yeah. So he's a hell of a lot better than I am. Let's put
does he know how to shrimp? I'm actually kind of.
I don't
curious.
Think he does. I don't know that he's ever shrimped.
It'd be a funny test though
in his life. Well, but to the point, like when wrestlers drop their hips and they sprawl, it's a very different sprawl than what you might do in jiu-jitsu because you still have to control the head differently, especially in a gi. So there's these nuances that, to your point, he can scramble like nobody's business.
Yes,
right? He can get up. He can avoid takedowns. He can get solid takedowns. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of nuances to jiu-jitsu that's just, it's a different, it's catch wrestling versus Greco-Roman. It's just a different style, different point system, different everything.
Yeah.
I remember when Jake started, I got him on his back and he's laying there, or he had me on my back and I had him in close guard and he had no idea what to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, this is where it ends for me. Like, I don't know. Yeah. This is the end of the road. And I think it's things like that, that no matter how good you are, there's still things you need to learn just to get that first stripe.
Man, I think you're right. I think every time I've rolled with him and I've ended up on top, like in north, south or side control, he just shoots his hips up and now he's standing up.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Yeah. That's the wrestler piece, right? That's
really
wrestler.
Weird.
Yeah. Wrestler piece. And the goal, probably in his head, much like mine, is not jiu-jitsu. It's get up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, cause if you're on bottom in a fight, it's not a very good place to be.
Yeah, well, and we saw you do that too. You saw both you and Jake
mm-hmm.
do that. Is a lot of that stand up. When I say stand up, I don't mean stand up striking or grab, you know, anything on the feet. Like literally standing up. When people in jiu-jitsu say just stand up, Dylan and Jake do exactly that. They just stand the fuck up.
That's when I scoop for your leg.
Yeah, he's got. He wants me to just stand up.
Yeah, he does. He wants everybody to stand up. where did it start for you? So if we go back to the beginning of your. We'll call it grappling or just kind of combat sports.
Sure.
Journey. Where did that start?
Well, it goes back quite a ways. I mean, childhood. I was probably 12 years old when I first did jiu-jitsu. I did it at a place called Albuquerque Kickboxing. And I think it's no longer existing, but more so maybe merged with Latrell's gym. Escapes me. But he used to be a Jackson guy, very famous, and old name, but very famous name. I had this crazy, just need to like bottle some aggression, if you will, you know, like, or to, rather than bottle it, actually like
get it out.
Yeah. It was a wild kid. And, my mom didn't know what to do, you know, and, And I think she had a recommendation from someone at her work to say, hey, take him to do jiu-jitsu, you know.
And you said you're 20, how old?
27.
So this is like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
This is before it really was popularized. It was still kind of
off
the side a little bit.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It was very weird because, you know, I was always wrestling with my cousins, wrestling with them as getting beat up by them. And, you know, they would demolish me. You know, it's just the standard big brother stuff, you know, but with cousins. We're Mexican, so cousins are just close as brothers, you know, like, so.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so my mom found this gym that had a jiu-jitsu class, and she put me in the jiu-jitsu club. Plus, I think I was getting a little tubby, you know? So it was like, it was more so, I was doing baseball and stuff, but it was the need to like keep me more active. And
baseball sucks. I'm not even going to lie. I hate it.
How dare you?
You know, so here's, I hate baseball.
I don't like watching it. I feel like playing it would be a blast, but watching it.
Agreed.
Hey, man.
Agreed.
Hey, man. I've played baseball my whole life, and I know a lot about the game. I've coached it for a long time as well. I hate watching it.
So I had somebody the other day tell me, "Oh, if I could get you to a game, you know, you'd enjoy it." I'm like,
"To a game is different. That's an experience. It's not watching the game."
But though. I lived in Boston, right? And I worked 4 blocks from Fenway Park.
Yeah.
Like legit, I would have people want to pay me for my parking spots that I had, so they could park at Fenway because it's so expensive to park in Boston. So I mean, it was that close,
right?
Free access. I could go anytime I wanted to. I think I went to one game in the decade that I lived, and it was through the World Series nonsense. Like it was right in the 2000s.
How dare you?
Well, guess 2004? What? We have the Cincinnati Reds.
It was and the
they're
Florence,
on a dude.
And the Florence Yells or something.
They are on a 10-game losing streak.
There you go. So I came from one extreme. So I moved there in 2003.
Mm.
So legit, like it was right at the ramp up. Yeah. I think I went to 2 games, and neither of them impressed me at all. Like, I was like, okay. Yeah,
dude, you were there when Boston was popping, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, baseball, basketball.
Football.
New England.
Football.
Hockey. Right,
like, yeah. The whole shebang.
Well, and I worked for TD Bank, and they own TD Garden. So that's where the Celtics play and the Bulls play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to see all sorts of cool shit.
Dude, that's
But baseball, cannot watch it.
Yeah, it's just going live is an experience. It's not about watching the game.
No,
it's about getting drunk and talking shit.
It's the like
yelling at them.
It's the $20 helmet nachos you can get.
Yes,
that tastes like dog shit. But
Vic has been talking about nothing but tortilla chips since he got to my house.
Dude, there's something about chips and guac that I just can't get over right now because all I can eat is celery and water.
You had celery and guacamole.
South American in you.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely what it is.
The what?
Celery and guacamole.
Yeah.
It's like the celery's like a chip. I'm like, nah, no. I mean, you keep thinking that, brother, but it's not even close.
Yeah.
So, 12 years old, start jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, that was the first time I even learned about that was a sport. You know, I thought fighting was just fighting. But yeah, and so, you know, my introduction to it was with adults. I was probably the only kid in that class. So, it was very weird.
Felt that.
I didn't understand what I was doing there. You know, I remember not getting it. Meaning, like, why are we practicing this? And what's the point, you know? Yeah. But that introduction to it had always stuck with me because, you know, you learn just a little bit. And then you take it to your friends, you start beating up your friends, you know? and then so that inception there stuck with me and then eventually bled into high school where I eventually wrestled.
So how long did you do at 12? How long did you end up doing that for?
Oh, a few months.
Oh, so it wasn't very long at all.
No. My mom couldn't afford it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I lived that life, right? I think I told that story about my short stint in taekwondo.
Dude, I didn't realize like how much of a hassle wrestling was.
Wrestling's awful.
Until I wrestled. And then it's like, dude, you have to travel a lot.
You know, I think can we talk about the exciting news?
What's the exciting news?
What's the exciting
news? You and your fiance?
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I didn't know it was public, super public.
Yeah, it's public.
So Dylan and his fiance are about to have a baby.
We made a clone.
Little Dylan.
Little itty-bitty Dylan. So super excited for that. But I will tell you, as the only parent here right now, soon to be parent, but only parent here, all teenage sports are a huge pain in the ass. Like, horrible.
Right.
Doesn't matter if it's cheerleading, gymnastics, soccer, basketball, baseball, band.
Jiu-jitsu.
Oh, wrestling, jiu-jitsu. It's all jiu-jitsu, though.
That's something.
So for jiu-jitsu, it's fairly localized. Like, you can control where they go and what they do. if you're on a wrestling team, you're going to whatever school they're wrestling that week.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not, wrestlers are crazy too. They're like, they do all these travel competitions is what he's talking about.
Well, travel soccer, it's the same thing.
The travel competitions are ridiculous.
Well, we've got like Josh Bam Bam. There you go. Josh, we love you. Sorry, I can't pronounce your last name. But Josh has two girls that do cheerleading and they were down in Florida the other weekend for cheerleading. Like, it doesn't matter what your kids do. It's obnoxious. So get them into jiu-jitsu because they get all that same
controlled
experience.
Chaos.
Well, yeah, because you get to determine what tournaments you want them in. Like, if you got shit going on Saturday, you don't go to that Naga. Like, you go to the next one.
Right.
So, a little word to the wiser. If you have kids, get them into jiu-jitsu.
Definitely going to be doing jiu-jitsu. That's for sure.
Good.
So, yeah, super excited. Congratulations, by the way. And recently engaged.
Yes.
So, that's exciting. Now, what does your fiancé think about what you do for fun? Because you have a full-time job also.
Yes. She thinks I'm all around crazy for my job and fighting. But she's the biggest support ever. Like, I can't even, to even, you know, give you a breakdown of what she does as far as mentally, emotionally, physically. If my body's broken down, she's the first to grab the ray gun, you know, and the Theragun, and you know, get my shoulders or get whatever, you know. And she's always making me food. If I'm cutting for a fight, right? Meaning like early on in the camp, I get into camp and I want to eat healthy, and I got to measure my macros and like do all this and make sure that, you know, I'm cutting down on carbs and I'm eating measured amounts of food. You know, she essentially, like, with the last fight, I told her, I gotta eat healthy and do a weight cut. She's like, cool, what do I gotta do?
That's awesome.
Yeah,
she
is amazing.
That support. So let's take a quick break real quick, because I do want to talk about some of your sponsors.
Okay.
I know there's at least one sponsor, two sponsors that I know of.
Yes.
So your job, I think, sponsors you.
Yes. So my job is amazing. Like, they're my boss, Mark, he's the owner, and his son, co-owner of Driveway Dumpsters. So it's just exactly what it sounds like. You know, they come and drop a dumpster off in your driveway so you can do spring cleaning. And they're amazing. Their company in particular, outside of, they separate themselves quite well. I'm extremely proud to represent them. Obviously, I work for them, not directly for Driveway Dumpsters, but in a different area of the company. But they are amazing. Those two gentlemen, Chase and Mark, are words can't describe them either. They're the most generous and supportive as well. If I need time off for medical stuff, I got to get some extra rounds in and spar in the morning during work. I mean, my boss has let me do that without question.
That's awesome.
And he's amazing. So I have undying gratitude, and I mean, I will always be indebted to these people, you know, that make up my support system. And, you know, I'm just incredibly grateful.
Well, then you've got another sponsor, more recent sponsor, actually.
Yes. Paper Street Coffee. So Paper Street Coffee, go to paperst.coffee, paperst. Okay. This is,
let's get this
plug
straight. We're going to put this in the show notes because it is paperst Coffee, not Paper Street. Paper Street Coffee is actually a different coffee company. Screw those guys.
Yes.
It's paperstcoffee.
That's right.
.com.
Yes.
Also on Facebook. So yeah, make sure it's coffee.
Yep.
S-T.
Paper Street Coffee.
Yeah, paper Street.
So Paper S-T. Street is abbreviated.
I'm a big fan of coffee.
Coffee's good.
You got to go to Paper Street Coffee and order paperstreetcoffee.com. Order some coffee, dude. I'm telling you. Dude.
I'll do it.
If you like coffee, let me tell you.
So do I like
just
coffee?
This isn't about coffee.
He just
coffee.
Looked at me and asked me if I like coffee.
I know, which is
stupid. Do you realize, Dylan, that I bought my last coffee maker? I love Keurig because it's super easy, super quick, right?
Uh-huh.
My last one had to have both Keurig and a pot, so I can make a pot or I can make a cup.
You got options.
That was an absolute must when we bought our last coffee machine. It had to have both options because I drink that much coffee. Yeah. Like, I legit will drink probably 15 cups of coffee a day.
Yeah.
See, if I wasn't, I'm pretty lazy because I have the grounds that you have to put in, like the Keurig thing.
Yeah, Keurig filter, yeah.
Yeah. And I hate doing it. I don't have the one with the pot on it.
See, you got the
pot. You're just
I need to get the one with the pot on it so I can just make a whole big ass thing.
Something over the hill of like 25, you start going like, I'm going to go out of my way to make coffee.
So he'd never had coffee until about 2 weeks ago.
No, I've had coffee before. Just not straight black coffee.
Yeah, like I said, he hadn't had coffee before.
Coffee,
he had like the
milk,
milk
and all that.
Yeah,
no, the garbage.
Yeah, I was doing sugar-free creamer. Okay, chill out. I like my French vanilla, all right?
Yeah, that's
you're drinking dessert.
Listen,
what you're doing.
Exactly.
So now, last couple weeks...
I've been drinking, like, straight black coffee.
Yeah, he has. And he calls me up, he's like, I feel like a man.
I fucking do. I'll go find the text message right now. I said I feel like a big boy or something like that. I feel like a man is a little overboard.
This is
I'm a big boy now.
Growing up 101. Yeah. First thing I do is figure out how to drink black coffee.
Dude, but black coffee, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah, it's
a good good brand. I mean, and I tried it before I reached out to Gabe. And what Gabe is doing at Paper Street Coffee is transcending coffee. When I got the package in the mail of my coffee that I ordered, I was already mind blown. And it's his attention to detail, right? And so when you have somebody who's sourcing these beans, getting them, roasting them, processing them, doing them, packaging them, you want attention to detail. You want somebody who truly cares. And when you just get the package in the mail, you go, wow, this is coffee that just got shipped to me. I think it would just come in a box, like whatever. But you open it up, it's like a gift.
That's awesome.
He's got a personal note in there for you. I mean, it's
dude,
all
that's
just,
the best
it's
when you
amazing.
Order from like smaller brands and they like give you a handwritten note.
You know, that's exactly what we do.
That so makes me want to buy from them even more.
All our geese go out with a handwritten note from Tara, Lisa, and I
uh-huh.
to say thank you for purchasing from us. And it's literally us handwriting these notes and a sticker, one of our stickers.
Right.
It's a personal touch, right?
Yes.
Like
yes.
You cared enough to go to my brand to buy it.
Yes.
I'm going to care enough that you came to my brand to buy it. You know, I think that's really important. I like that. That's awesome.
Gabe is an amazing dude. And I think what he's going to be doing some amazing things here. He's going to skyrocket to the
That's
top,
fantastic.
I'm sure.
How did you meet him?
I met him by way of the CrossFit community. And he was making some big waves through a podcast. And he's very savvy when it comes to like his entrepreneurial like kind of methods, meaning like he knows himself very well. And you could just tell this, right? Like, because he's going to be him tried and true through and through, like no matter what. And so he wanted to support someone's podcast who was doing great things, the Sevan podcast, right? It's a CrossFit community podcast, but he interviews fighters, all that jazz. So it's a great podcast and he really liked what he was doing. So Gabe put it out all on the line and just reached out to him and said, hey man, I want to sponsor your podcast. I want to support you because I understand like, you know, podcasts take money to run.
The CrossFit podcast.
Correct.
Yep.
Yes. And so he knows podcasts take money to run, you know? So he's like, I want to throw you some money. I want to throw you a bunch of free coffee. And you know, Sevan, the host of the podcast said, I already have coffee. Like I don't, you know, I'm not going to drink someone else's coffee. It's my friend's coffee. And he's like, I don't care. Yeah, I just want to support you.
That's awesome.
He just put it out on the line. He's like, hey, you don't even have to talk about it. I don't care if you promote it. I'm not asking for promotion or anything like that. I just want to support you, right? That's pretty amazing.
That's fantastic.
Right? And then so turns out he has great coffee. And then Sevan, the host of the podcast, was like, I'm going to promote the heck out of this because this is awesome. And I love Gabe. You know, he's just an honest, like, great guy. And then so to me, if I can support a company like that in any way,
heck yeah,
absolutely.
So if there's anybody out there that likes this podcast that much and wants to give me money for my podcast, because yes, podcasts do, in fact, cost money to run and operate.
I want coffee.
And we do like coffee. No, but so something that you said in there interests me. So you said the CrossFit community.
Mm.
So you kind of talked us through your...
All right, before we get on that, I found the conversation where I sent you the picture of the coffee.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't say I feel like a big boy. I did say I feel like a man.
I know you did.
And
it was super aggressive.
And you said, that's the way coffee's meant to be. See, picture and all.
That's right.
All right. Okay, we can go back. CrossFit community, go.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you talked about what you did as a child, right? And then you said you went to high school and into wrestling. So you got into wrestling. We'll get back to that in just a minute. But while we're here in the CrossFit community, how did you get embedded in the CrossFit community? Is that something you've done before? Or?
No, I got introduced to the CrossFit community through a CrossFit regional athlete who was my platoon sergeant at the time when I was in the military. He was incredibly fit and incredibly big.
He was like me. So if you're not watching this on YouTube, Dylan's face was priceless right there.
Exactly like Nick. He was all of 225 pounds and 6'2" and jacked. he was huge. And I was in a indoctrination platoon to like do high speed stuff, you know, and I wanted to be recon. And so he was running it and he was a beast, you know, and it didn't matter what we did, if we were running to the ends of the earth or if we were swimming or if we were doing some kind of workout or we're, you know, doing sprints or doing some kind of high intensity workout. That's all the indoc platoon is really. It's just thrashing you, getting you ready for a really hard 3 months of training. he was a CrossFit athlete. At the time, I was a bodybuilder. And I had all this thing in my head of like, oh, CrossFitters are lame. And you know,
they can't do anything.
Anything that you could think of, like anyone talking shit about it, like I said it, you know. Yeah, kipping pull-ups, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And I would just talk shit. I never did it, right? And I couldn't figure out why this guy was bigger than me in every which way possible and more fit. And he was running so fast, no one could keep up with him. No one could swim with him. No one, like nothing. He was a stud. And then so... naturally, by him leading a lot of these workouts, we were doing CrossFit, you know, sure. Not so much barbells, but kettlebells, stuff like that, wall balls. And then so talked to a friend of mine who I was my training partner, who we'd work out all the time. We were bored with weightlifting. So we said, let's do this thing called the Dirty 30. And that was, I think, the first workout that I did. So it just kind of expanded from there. We thought it was fun, you know. It was like a bit of a competition, kind of. And then eventually we got into the skill movements, and that was really what grabbed me, like the gymnastics side, the snatch, barbell stuff like that, you know, like the real technical.
Well, it's interesting that you call that the gymnastics side, because it is. Like, yeah. In jiu-jitsu, my jiu-jitsu journey, I started doing some of the same stuff. And you try to do a snatch, and you watch it, and you're like,
snatches are
picking shit up.
The snatch is weightlifting. But yeah, when I said gymnastics, I just meant like the rings, like ring muscle-ups and stuff like that.
Well, no, but I think even like, you know, it doesn't matter if it's cleans or if it's, you know, clean jerks or if it's the snatch.
So technical.
The body mechanics that go into that make up probably as much as the muscle that it takes to do the things also.
It's way more than the muscle.
I mean, I'll watch people like Elisa, who's, you know, she's been on the podcast, 120 pounds, Bella, same thing, where they can, with right technique, they can outlift me.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, I'm obviously way bigger, way stronger, but the technique is just amazing.
There are CrossFit girls that will shame you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's
awesome.
Dude, I hate cleans.
You hate too clean or you hate clean?
No, like, both. I just hate cleans. I've never been good at them. I'm better at snatches than I am cleans. Bella is an absolute machine when it comes to cleans. Yeah. And, like, every workout she does, she's like, yeah, I'm going to do some cleans. And it's not like 10 cleans. It's like 30. And I'm like, what the hell?
I know why you hate cleans.
Why?
Because cycling a barbell, doing cleans, power cleans or whatever, is awful.
It's brutal.
It's so brutal. Yeah. When you're cycling a barbell for reps of 10, 15 or whatever, and you got 9 rounds or 6 rounds.
Yeah.
Or
it's always the easy shit that you're like, oh my God.
And you got other stuff in between.
Yeah.
Every time you go back to the barbell,
and also making sure that you have super good form, that your elbows are out.
Well, that's my journey started with a lot of CrossFit-esque kind of stuff, right? It was always the workouts. You'd look at the WOD, and you'd be like, oh, this is going to be an easy one today. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that kick your ass. And then you look at the ones, you're like, oh, this is going to suck. You're like, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's those super simple, just high rep, easy, basic shit. And I think that translates into jiu-jitsu, right?
Sure.
It's the same idea. It's the shrimping that just sucks. Mm-hmm. With Tyler Hampton, was our head coach for a while, amazing grappler, and we used to do like 20 minutes of just drills, just straight line drills for 20 minutes.
Shrimping up and down the mat 4 times is like, you never had ab cramps like that.
Dude, you think you're going to die. It's horrible, but that's the stuff that makes you better.
Yeah. Right?
That's the stuff that makes you good.
Mm-hmm.
Inchworms.
Oh,
fucking inchworms. Yeah.
And the Spider-Man crawls.
Those weren't that bad.
They were
okay.
Awful.
No, I get
awful. Yeah. After the inchworms, after the shrimping, after the roll forward.
No, dude, I didn't mind like the spider or alligator crawls, whatever they're called.
God, they're horrible. The whole thing's awful. But I think so. That's interesting. So let's go. So big in the CrossFit community.
Yep.
Let's bridge that gap. So in high school, you wrestled in high school?
Yes.
So let's
for
talk
1 year.
So talk to us about that for just a minute.
Well, that was a long-standing kind of wish from the wrestling coach. Not me in particular. It's just what wrestling coaches do, I think. They just walk around the school and point at people and say, come to wrestling practice.
They do.
They just try to
really
recruit everyone they can. It's weird.
Throw as much spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks, right?
Yeah, but he knew my sister. She was a couple grades ahead of me. So he knew her. So in particular, he would like really point me out and always bug her, like, get him in the wrestling room. Like, get him to join wrestling. And I never would. I didn't want to. Again, this shit talking. You want me to put on it? That's gay, dude. You know?
Put like, a singlet.
Yeah. And I realized I was just weak. You know, that's all that was. So eventually I broke down. I think I just had made some good friends in baseball, and a lot of them were wrestlers. And then so through just being a boy, you wrestle, and we may or may not have had a lot of fights going on in the baseball locker room where we'd bring gloves.
Start throwing hands fight in the dugout.
Well, it's not like that. It was more coordinated. That's it was like a fight club, but May allegedly.
Are you supposed to talk about that?
Well, I don't know. Okay. What's the statute of limitations? But yeah, so, you know, I just was always into the combative thing, you know? And then, so I said, screw it. I was a junior. And, I don't know why. I just decided to do it, and man, was that an eye opener! Like, holy crap! Wrestling is a brutal sport, and I was fairly decent at it, I think, for just not having ever done it. And I was JV, not varsity. So it was a different level on varsity, but JV, I was like 12-3, I want to say, or something like that. I lost the same guy 3 times. I hate
Son
him.
Of a bitch.
I'm going to find him. But yeah, it was a blast. It was a blast doing it. It was super difficult. And that was the first time that I think that I'd ever really like pushed myself to that level. Like mind frame of like, holy crap. Conditioning in baseball, it has its own like hard, like things to it. It's a lot of mundane, like running and stuff like that. Poles is what we call them, running from foul pole to foul pole. But, with wrestling, it was that explosion and that grit and that just need to win. And it's just you and the other guy, you know? And I think that really fueled that fire. And I'm forever grateful that I did it, because it gave me an understanding of my body, and hip movement and things like that, that translates very well to fighting, translates great to jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
So
why did it stop?
I got really good at baseball.
Okay.
So I did not want to commit to doing it senior year.
Yeah, that's hard. When you have a proclivity to one versus the other, and then you have to make a choice.
Yeah, and then I kind of looked at the weight classes, and I said, the guy below me and the guy above me and the guy in my weight class, I can't beat. I won't, no chance. So I would be on varsity, basically riding the bench. I'd just be their training partners, essentially.
That's what I was.
So it just wasn't worth it for me.
I got to be a training partner on the varsity team.
That's fair.
As really? A sophomore.
Dude, I was first team all JV, dude.
Yeah.
First team all second team.
I was the bench guy. I was the grappling dummy because I didn't have grappling dummies. I was the only guy big enough to play with these other two guys, and they would just literally just beat my ass on the reg. I had never learned any wrestling
at all.
That's
so funny.
I learned how to get beat up. That's about it.
Yeah.
I learned how to take pressure, so that was cool.
Yeah.
But much beyond that, I didn't learn anything. I learned to be scared to get thrown. I take that through to today because it was awful. Yeah. But no, I think that's cool. So you kind of have this start-stop relationship with grappling in totality, right? Started when you were a kid, stopped. Started in high school, stopped.
Yep. Sounds pretty toxic, man.
It always continued in my life, just because I'm a boy. I you know, like growing up around your friends and crazy cousins, like you're just always doing it for some reason. You're always fighting and wrestling, and just
that is really true. Like it never stops.
So I never had that opportunity.
So that's why sport and organization and something that is managed by adults is way better.
It's appropriate.
People get hurt.
So you got done with wrestling, got done with baseball. Did you go to college for baseball? Like, did that go any further?
No, I'm an idiot. So no, the NCAA did not approve me to play in college baseball because of my grades and classes that I took. Unfortunately, that's a big regret of mine, but it's one of those where I'm like, man, I wish I would have paid attention in school, you know? And that's fine, you know, but I went, I just really just tried to figure out my life from there. I had nothing. Like, it was crazy. And so I joined the military.
That happens to kids, right? Is they're really, really good at something, and then all of a sudden that something goes away for whatever reason.
Yep.
Could be grades, could be a torn ligament, it could be some kind of, you know, other type of injury.
Yep.
Could be just that you're not good enough, right? Like that's a real thing too. And then all of a sudden your identity's almost gone.
Yeah.
I think that happens in jiu-jitsu also, where you've got people that are really, really good in the beginning, and all of a sudden something happens, and maybe they just don't catch up to everybody else, or they get hurt, and their identity gets lost, and they've got to refine that. So I think it's interesting you did that, and you did that through the military.
Well, yeah. I would assume so. Yeah, because my yes. Yeah. It's very accurate. It's funny. I wish I would have pursued jiu-jitsu instead of the military. I love my experiences in the military, but I think I could have found this same thing, maybe even better as far as culture goes, in something like jiu-jitsu. It's more productive, and then maybe I would have been a little bit more disciplined in my civilian life, but the benefit of the military was that I had no discipline.
Right.
It was funny, actually, to mention too, I actually did a jiu-jitsu competition, a no-gi jiu-jitsu competition. I was senior in high school. I was going in to be a senior, and I took second place in my division. Or did I win it? I might have won.
Were you at a school or anything, or you just?
No, we went to a school. It's called Southwest Grapple Fest.
That's badass.
And I just wanted to sign up for it because we were, our whole lives, me and my friends, were huge UFC fans. Huge UFC fans, WEC, whatever we could find on Spike, you know, like any of the Strike Force, like we loved all the big names of old, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's partly why we were chaotic, but so I really wanted to do jiu-jitsu, like a competition. So I saw Southwest Grapple Fest, I signed up for it. I went and did it in my division, which was intermediate, no-gi, under 18. And I think I had to, it said, if you wrestled, you have to do intermediate.
That's a dumb rule.
A lot of places do that.
Yeah. So I did that, and I either won or took second. I guess it doesn't matter.
I want to stop you real quick. So right there, guys, that is the reason that competitions only matter to get better, because 10 or 15 years from now, you're not even going to remember the outcome of the event.
Yeah.
But you are going to remember the learnings that you took away from that event as you get better, and your coaches can help coach you to get better at the sport. So
yeah, that's exactly
great testament.
Exactly. But I do remember the one that I did win, which was the same competition. They accidentally printed my name off on the card twice, but one was for the adult division. And I was like 17 or 18 at the time. I might not have been 18, but I was close enough to where they were like, if you want to do it, you can do it. So I was just like, stood on the podium of this competition of like four matches. And then I was like, okay, I guess. I did not know what I was getting into. Holy crap, dude. I got armbarred so fast, and my arm was falling off. It was completely hyperextended. It was crazy. It hurt so bad. And then the other guy just smashed me immediately. They were so good. and I was very bad, but that was fun. But what the benefit of all that was, when I looked on the website to like show people, because they'd post the you know, who won and all that jazz, right? Yeah. They mixed that up too. So they said that I won the adult competition.
Yo, that's
and the guy who won was in fourth.
Oh,
didn't make any
that's
sense.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So it's if anybody asks,
industries, right? Like, yeah. The guy who competed won everything and ended up 12th place or something, fourth place.
Yeah. So that's a fun.
So went down in the books as you are
the champ
of the Southwest grappling industry. So that's pretty dope.
Hey man,
that's cool as hell. So you go to the military. Which branch did you serve in?
Marine Corps.
So we got a Marine. Thank you for your service. Appreciate that.
Oh. Happy to do
I was going
to
make a joke, but then I was like, you know what? No, like, just,
I just try to say thank you. I didn't do anything. So,
you did, right? I think everybody who served in any capacity, either first responder or in the military, you've done something. You've given up part of something.
PSA for everybody out there, shaking hands of people in the military is great and all. Shake a cop's hand.
For sure.
Shake a firefighter's hand. EMS, any first responder, they deserve that handshake way more. And not to take anything away from the veterans, but I think we miss the first responders more than we do the veterans.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think both, in my opinion, because I'm super close to the military. My closest friend, he's been in the military for 30 years, and I just see, and he's a comms guy. He's not going out and doing the thing on the front lines or anything. He's not putting his life necessarily at risk, but the sacrifices he gives up every day to being away from his wife and his family and moving every 3 years and all that, that's a lot. First responders deal with that every day also, right? So I think to the point, first responders and military, I think those are people that I admire. I think as much as I've done, those are people that give up their lives every day to go do something that helps everybody else. So that's like the ultimate gift from everybody. So if you see a first responder or military, just say thanks.
Say thanks.
Back on that, so you get out of the military and it's time to be an adult in an unstructured world. What happened? Well, what'd you do?
Chaos. Basically, I had to figure something out. I mean, I was figuring it out throughout the whole way anyway, because it was reserves, right? So, like, mixing reserves with civilian life is complicated when you really don't know what's going on with your own head and your own life. So it's just bouncing from jobs and stuff like that, trying to find something that would pay. At some point, I just wanted to jump into a gym, so I went to Jackson's. Jackson's MMA. I grew up, I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I went to Jackson Winks and walked in there, and a guy named Misha greeted me, and he was scary looking. And I was like, "Hey, I want to sign up." And he was like, "You fight?" And I was like, "No." He was like, "Okay." He's like, go to a different gym. So they have a branch off gym, which is called Winks, I think, which is like where Holly Holm does like cardio kickboxing, like for runs classes like
that's
that.
Badass.
It's meant for like your novice and your introduction, which is good to separate it from. This is where all the pros are, man. You know,
yeah.
Like,
you know,
so you basically go there and you can earn your way into there. Like, they'll invite you to do a Saturday training, and eventually it'll drip more into that.
Oh, that's fucking
and
sick.
And so I was like dabbling in going to Winks, and again it was very sparse. I would show up. I signed up for a year. Contract or whatever. It was $150 a month. I didn't realize that I couldn't afford it until probably 3 months in. And
I got 9 more months of this.
Yeah. And so that kind of ended there. But I had a friend who was, had the same kind of, pursuit as me. Like, he wanted to fight, he wanted to do jiu-jitsu, all that stuff. So we would just put on gear and we'd roll all the time, or we'd spar and stuff, just not knowing what we're doing. And we just did it on our own.
Yeah.
And so that kind of like kept that fuel, that fire going. That's cool. You know?
So then you ended up in Ohio.
Yes.
How the hell did you get from New Mexico to Ohio?
Well, I was trying to go to California and went the wrong direction. No, I'm kidding.
You have to go north, but then you go west instead of east.
Yeah. My old man lives out in Indiana. So tri-state area, right? So he lives in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, and, I wanted to get the heck out of New Mexico. I was spinning my wheels. I couldn't figure things out. I figured, why not change it up? And, so I packed up everything I owned in my truck, which wasn't a lot, you know, and, I changed units. I realized I wasn't going to go recon at that point. That was the big factor that was keeping me in New Mexico. It was like, for years I was trying to go recon, but you know, things in the military work very, there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of moving parts and stuff, and those things don't align sometimes. So, eventually I realized, I was like, this ain't going to happen. So then I hung it up, you know, and I was like, okay, let's change it up. And then I figured I'd go out and live with the old man for a couple months and get on my feet, and then, you know, go from there. And that's essentially what happened, which was awesome. The first gym that I found out here was Triple Crown Athletic.
So let's talk about that real quick. So for those that aren't in this immediate tri-state area, so you got Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky, and they're relatively close to the part of, you know, Cincinnati, mm-hmm. greater Cincinnati area, kind of cover all of it.
Yeah.
In fact, the Cincinnati airport is in Kentucky, and it's like 3 miles from Indiana. So we're really close in that tri-state kind of configuration. I think it is important to recognize that Indiana is probably 45, you know, the part of Indiana you're from, or your dad's lived, is 45 minutes to an hour from here, I'd say?
Yeah.
Right?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, now you live in Ohio, yeah. just north of Cincinnati, in a place called Loveland, which is a good 45 minutes anyway. So how the hell did you find Triple Crown Athletic, which is not our gym, but it was before Triple Crown?
I was confused. I actually found Triple Crown MMA first online. but when I GPS'd it, it took me to Triple Crown Athletic.
Okay.
And they both said Florence, Kentucky. I didn't pay attention to the address number or anything. So I was just like, okay, I must be going to the right place. I didn't even think twice about it. And I walked in on a Saturday where it said it had open mat. They didn't have open mat. And I was telling them about open mat. I was like, don't you guys have an open mat? And they were like, no. And it was Damian Tannenbaum.
That's awesome.
And he was like, that's cool, man. I'll roll with you. And then so, like, you know, very nice of him, kind of. Just wanted to feel me out and see what I knew and stuff. Obviously nothing, but you know, enough to where he would just got to figure me out. And then, I did like a few trials there. I did, a class or two, you know, I wanted to get into there. You know, I was really only showing up at open sparring and stuff mm-hmm. like that, you know? So, I never really full pot committed to that gym.
Sure.
And plus I wanted to find a home. So I wanted to make sure that I explored all the other gyms too.
Yeah.
So I went to JG MMA,
which is 10, 15 minutes from where you live, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I went to Triple Crown, you know, I went to a gym in Indiana. I went to all the places basically that, you know, didn't say Gracie Baja on it because I didn't want to go to a chain.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so from there, I just explored all the gyms. And then Triple Crown ended up being the one that I went back to most. And that was
Triple Crown MMA.
Yes. Triple Crown MMA was the one.
They always come back.
Dude, that culture there is amazing. I just felt like that was my people, you know, immediately. And to meeting Jordan, was awesome. And I felt like he created that culture where it was just where I walked onto the mat with my gi going, can somebody help me tie my belt? You know, I still don't know how to tie it, but but I didn't know how to tie it. And Jordan walks up and he's like, don't worry about it. And he's like, just tie a knot. And then he's like, let's go. And he was the first dude I rolled with there.
That's
an awesome leader, dude. So, you know,
we have a black belt. I'm not going to name any names. We have a black belt.
Kevin. Murphy.
And he still has a tough time tying his belt.
He doesn't even have a hard time. He just refuses to tie it. He'll tie it once his lapels come untucked. He's like, ah, fuck it.
I'd say he honestly doesn't care. That's the point. That's the culture, right? It's not the most important thing in the world.
And to each his own, right? Some people want extreme structure and some people want gritty hole in the wall stuff. And you know, I like the grittiness. We don't have to be so buttoned down, you know, and some gyms like JG was very much like that. And there's an allure to that too.
Yeah.
JG was extremely structured. Everybody would respond, you know, every time an instructor said something, I was like, what is going on here? It was crazy. But it was a cool dynamic. Yeah. Everybody would line up perfectly. It was like a militant, kind of deal. And so, that has its own allure, but me personally, I'm like, I want the gritty guy. I want the less buttoned down guys, you know, I want the tear off your sleeves kind of deal.
Well, I think it's important I think what you did is perfect. And this is what I recommend to everybody is try different gyms because they have very different feels. They have very different mm-hmm. environments, different coaching styles, different staffs. I mean, different everything, right? So to understand what you want, it's kind of like going to college. And picking out your profession at 18, I think it's the dumbest thing we do as a culture.
Right.
Is telling an 18 or 17-year-old kid, hey, go figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life. Before you do that, give me $150,000 to tell you that you're good enough to do it.
Yeah.
And then that's exactly what you're going to do for the next 60 years. That's all you can do. It's crazy. And I think choosing a gym is similar.
Yeah.
Right? We're asking people that know nothing about the sport,
mm-hmm.
don't understand the culture, the environment, nothing, to choose a gym. Off the rip, that's what you get, and that's what you're going to think of forever.
Mm.
And I always implore people, hey, try out different gyms, because this may or may not be a good fit for you.
Right.
You might want that discipline.
Right.
You might want a different mix than we have. You might want the mix that we do have. And I think that's critical, in my opinion, for any, I would say, jiu-jitsu or MMA. And I think what you described with the Wink situation, mm-hmm. I think that's a really cool idea, where you've got these two separate environments,
mm-hmm.
one that's more meant for people that are getting into the sport,
right,
and then one that's meant for the hardcore, true athletes that are training to fight or training for an event.
Right.
because they are different training environments. They're different things. And I think most schools don't have the financial, I mean, look, schools don't make a lot of money.
Right.
They don't have the financial ability to have both of those unless you have a big name backing you or a bunch of money, one of the two.
Right.
So to have that ability to separate those two, and in some cases, it just means a different gym.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really, really valid point. So I'm curious. So the 45-minute drive back and forth, like that, I admire that about you. The fact that you work all day,
yeah,
45 minutes away, you get to the gym as soon as you can, like you're still in your work clothes,
yeah,
get changed, and then you're going, you're there till 8:30.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 8 o'clock and you know, we're kind of cleaning up around you as you are still working with who's ever there and willing to work with you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get changed and everything, get home and right back at it the next day. I think that's amazing.
Thank you.
When it comes to getting ready for a fight, right, that camp versus the regular training, I'm curious what keeps you doing, like you have this kind of start-stop mm-hmm. relationship with combat sports in general, right? Wrestling or if it's jiu-jitsu. Does the fight piece of it or the camp piece of it, does that push you more or is it just kind of a, that's what I have to do right now, we'll see what happens afterwards?
The fight, I wanted to fight for reasons other than fighting. The challenge of being able to execute under extreme pressure is a big fear of mine. It's a massive fear, that I wanted to, it's not really happened. It's in a sense of like in my adulthood, I haven't had situations where something went crazy and I didn't react. I've always reacted, which is great, but I feel like it's a big fear of mine. And so because of that, I think it's a tool that you need to sharpen.
Yeah.
And so that's why I got into fighting. That's why I wanted to fight, because I said, if there's a way to manufacture that real life scenario, this is the closest way to do it.
Sure.
And so that's why I wanted to fight. What I didn't realize is I'm a big, explorer of emotions. I'm deep into like philosophy and like just psychology and like just everything that has to do with why we do things and how we operate and why we react to things. What I found out going through camp was an even greater experience, because you have crazy ups and downs. Your body can be broken down. Your testosterone, your hormones can plummet at any given time because you're just training so hard. And then you're working a full-time job on top of that. I'm in construction. So it's like, you know, it gets crazy sometimes, but that's the drive, right? And loyalty is what keeps me going to that gym. I love those guys. I love you guys, you know, like
I love you too.
What I feel that you guys have developed and created over there is incredible. And I had, again, that was the gym I started with. And so I can go to a gym that's 15 minutes away, right? But there's something important to me about going back to the place I started, the first place that I committed, because there is an initial thing that people give to you when they bring you in, mm-hmm. you know? And that to me is critical to try to give back as much as possible. So meaning the only way I can give back is stay a member, you know. You could be like Russ and be a member at a bunch of gyms, you know, that's great too. But like
I think even Russ has that same sense of I'm gonna call it loyalty.
That's why he comes back, right?
Well, it's the Sean Hammonds.
Yeah.
Because right? He doesn't go to JG, he doesn't go to the Carlson schools. Mm-hmm. I mean he will. It's not like mm-hmm. we're saying you can't ever, right? We encourage it actually. But he's loyal to the Sean Hammonds organization, I guess I'll call it. Yeah. So he travels from Sean Hammond's gym to Sean Hammond's gym to Sean Hammond's gym. So I think even with him, there's that sense of, again, loyalty is probably a bit of a strong word. I'm not really into the culty part of jiu-jitsu.
I am. Loyalty.
I know you are.
I'm just in the loyalty of the person-y part.
But I think, that like Russ is a good, great example. To me, Russ is one of those people that I know I can always call, right? Mm-hmm. Nakana Costa is one of those people that legit, some stuff happened not too long ago. And I'm like, man, I think I know what I'm doing, mm-hmm. but I don't know if I'm not doing it right. Like I didn't know enough to know if I was doing the right things or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I could pick up the phone and call Nakana. Yeah. Be like, dude, I need some help. Like, hey, what can you help me with? And it's that those relationships that you build over time in the sport that are valuable.
Well, showing up to open mats, man, and knowing nothing and kind of going against your, I think everybody has a natural kind of angst or fear of like approaching people, especially people in jiu-jitsu realms. They look scary, you know? Guys like Johnny
V.
So helpful.
I mean, so incredibly nice, and just, and was a brown belt at the time, and was incredible, and just so willing to teach me things. For
almost
free.
Like they want
just
to.
Like, yeah,
not even willing. They have this innate longing to show other people.
And hey, man, when somebody's way better than you and they don't strangle you, that's a thank you as well.
Yeah, no shit.
Like, they're just letting you work.
Yeah,
they're letting you pass. They're letting you put them in bad positions so that they can get some work too. But they could just destroy you, but they don't. And it's just the willingness that people have in a jiu-jitsu community in particular that they want you to grow.
Yeah.
They want you to come, keep coming, you know, and they want you to, and it just feels so welcoming and loving. And then I get into the fighting realm. Those same guys that I was in the mats with the first time I showed up, they're doing everything they can to help me get better at jiu-jitsu and no-gi, right? They're going out of their way to help me in my training in any way possible. Yourself, Vic, I mean, the names go on, right? And that kind of sacrifice that people make, they don't have to help you. They don't have to make special time for you. They don't have to do your drills that you're doing or get you on the wall and, like, do wall wrestling. Why would they do wall wrestling? They're jiu-jitsu guys, you know? Like, but they do. They help you because it's an extra body. It's a fresh body. And they want, they just, so to me, I want to reciprocate the gratitude and like the help by just staying a member and staying showing up and giving back in any way I can.
I think that's great. And I think, you know, a testament to that is Ked. So
yes.
Kedron, he's a black belt with us. He also coaches boxing locally. Mm-hmm. He coaches high school boxing, does a little bit with the college around here as well. And we were at open mat, I think last Saturday. And I don't even remember how it came up, but something happened and I asked Ked, I have a good relationship with Ked. Just again, one of those people that you're ready to help at the drop of a dime, right? And I said, hey, how do we fix this? And I think he was actually watching you and Jake spar and he's like, man, they're flinching a lot.
Yeah.
And he recognized that. And he's like, hey, try this drill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because Jeff Johnson, he's our head striking instructor, phenomenal striker, long career, right? He's 26 years old, but he's been doing it since he was like six.
Yeah.
Right? So he's since a toddler. But really good. And to have the, I talked to Jeff afterwards and I said, hey, you know, Ked was here and he was helping the guys out and this is what he showed him. Cause I wanted to make sure that carried through.
Right.
And even Jeff's admiration for Ked was cool. Right. So he's like, yeah, man, Ked, he knows what he's like. He is just a good dude. Like he understands it. But that's the thing that I think a lot of times I've seen at least that if one coach is your coach and they show you something, the expectation is you do it their way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in jiu-jitsu, there's so many different ways to do things, right? Like side control. Some people frame off the hip, some people frame off the bicep.
Mm-hmm.
There's reasons for both of those. But in some institutions, you do it the way your professor told you to.
Right.
Well, the reality is that's going to work in 85% of the situations, but there's 15% that's not.
Right.
And framing off the other side is going to help. And understanding the why behind. Nakana talks a lot about the why behind. Why do you frame off the bicep versus the hip?
Mm-hmm.
Striking. Right? Why would you parry a jab but not a cross? Why would you deflect? And all those things, right? And you can learn that perspective from different people in different ways. And I think that's, to me, that's what that community is about.
Yep.
And not so much just the saying oos after everything that somebody says.
Yeah.
Wearing the patch that everybody wants you to wear. That's not the community. That's not the culture. That's a forced culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's really uncomfortable for me. I think that's where the culty piece comes in. I'm not comfortable with. But I think what you mentioned, where you've got all these people around you that are willing to help, whatever your goals and your targets are, and Johnny V was great for that, right? It didn't matter what. Like, hell, I outweighed Johnny tremendously. And I mean, he could do whatever the hell he wanted to. But he recognized that my body didn't move the same way his did. Jordan did the same thing, and they would show me different ways to accomplish the end result, even though I couldn't put my knee to my nose, right? And that was the really cool thing about having those people. And then you got Ked, who's a bigger guy like I am, who's showing me the way he does it, which is slightly different. I pick up from him. So now I've got knowledge from Johnny. I've got knowledge from Jordan. I've got knowledge from Kevin and James. And all these people come together to give you a holistic view of what you're capable of, which is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, fights are weird. Fight camp, especially that is where you, okay, coach is the only one who I'm listening to.
Yep.
Right. But I will gladly take anyone's advice anytime within camp.
Yeah.
Is it going to be applied to what I'm doing at that camp? Probably not. Right. Because the coach and fighter dynamic has to stay, you know, pretty stringent.
Yeah, I mean, you have to trust you have to trust your coach, right?
I can't be adding things that he's not telling me to work on.
Right.
Because then he's going to be like, what are you, you know, he's going to be lost, you know, confused. Yeah. But I can come to him and say, hey, man, Ked was giving some freaking awesome advice. And he recognizes it. He knows about it. He's like, yeah, like that stuff is awesome. He's like, but we're not there yet. You know, like
we dribble these into your drills after the fight, just like the first fight from this fight. It's been all footwork based and moving a lot more. The first fight was don't gas out, right? It was don't blow your wad and don't be chasing anybody. Just walk him down, plod forward, because we knew we had an incredibly good striker, right? And me and my striking abilities is far below his, but we knew we had wall wrestling on him. We knew we had the ground on him. That was a game plan that was, if you look at it, you go, wow, this guy doesn't have any footwork. It's because it's true. But we weren't going to play a footwork game with this guy who's got incredible footwork, right? You're not going to win that game. So it's important to kind of, in my stage, I believe, is what Jeff is doing is piecing in these overall dynamic movements that have to do with fighting, like Ked's talking about. That drill is great. And me and Jake do it, you know? And it's cool, the head movement, and it's really just even thinking about it, putting it in your arsenal, right, it makes you grow. As how you, it makes your acumen for the game grow.
Well, I think that's
extremely
where,
important, right? But then I still got to focus on the game plan.
Well, I think that's where it's up to people like me that were, I was there on that Saturday. I listened to what Ked had to say. And then I can go back to Jeff and say, hey, Jeff, this is what Ked saw.
Yes.
And now Jeff can say, oh, I see the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's a good move. Or, yeah, I knew about that, but I need to get this done for, this is more critical for the step that Dylan's, because Ked sees you once a week, right?
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're Dylan daily or at least three times a week with Jeff.
But by the way, for you thinking about getting into jiu-jitsu, anybody out there, Ked is in every gym, right?
There is a
Ked. He's one of a kind, right? But he's in every gym. That's the jiu-jitsu community. You will see this person once, and they will go out of their way to take time from their day to help you and show you something.
Yeah. Well, I think what I've experienced is that they'll show back up.
Yes.
When you don't expect it.
Yes.
And I'm going to give a shout out to Marissa Pender. That happened to me. So I think I may have told this story. If I did, my apologies, but it's a cool story. So Sean Schneider.
Okay, listen, Nick, you have told this story at least.
I just threw a pen. So we're sitting on the bench and, you know, so I have told the story for those that haven't heard it.
A lot.
We did a move. We fucked it all up. She basically told us exactly what to do and it worked like a charm. And we had no idea who she was. So we were just thinking she was an oracle. But come full circle, we're, you know, a year and a half from that point, she's now one of our sponsored fighters. Mm. Like, we sponsor her for Shadow Realm.
Right.
I just sponsored her husband, Jeremy, in his fight that happened this weekend. So that person that was a once-in-a-lifetime sitting on a bench, didn't know who she was, now all of a sudden she's becoming an integral part of our journey and our evolution.
Yes.
Right? So I think that's the cool thing, is that even though everybody has that person that may show up once every 6 months, mm-hmm. once a year, they show back up.
Oh, yeah.
And you see him again, and you take what you... Oh, I remember when Ked, he coached me through something once, and it was, you know, typical, I forget, it was probably open mat or something, and you're rolling with somebody, and all the coaches are, like, trying to give you direction and tell you what to do. And Ked's like, do this, do this, do this, and I did that and that and that, and it all, like, just perfectly worked. I'm like, oh, God damn, I want to learn that.
Yeah.
But I think those are the things that we can take away.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing that this whole realm of martial arts and jiu-jitsu in particular being the inception of it, like, was... When I was in the CrossFit space, I got really good really fast, and I had a big dumb ego, and I'm still dumb, but less of an ego. But I got really good really fast, so it became a game of like just go 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 and not trust the process, you know, and like try to just max out every day and try to do as many ring muscle ups as possible and do all these skill movements that, but I wasn't progressing in my fitness, you know, and I wasn't doing the right steps, and I was broken all the time. What I've taken in somewhat years of maturity and seeing how this culture operates is, hey man, listen, people have gems they will give you if you just listen, mm-hmm. you know? And so this whole community has taught me, like, if anybody wants to teach you something, be a white belt, you know, be a white belt in any modality.
Yeah.
Right.
Beginner's mindset.
In any modality, as soon as somebody's trying to give you advice, be the lowest of ranking possible. So that way you could open up everything to their possibility of their perspective of what they're seeing. And I think that's applicable to life, right? And so it's all a part of this culture and this jiu-jitsu thing, right? Of helping each other.
Yeah.
And it helped me a ton just by learning how to listen. You know, and so when you come along, give me some advice, or Ked comes along, Vic tells me gems all the time, you know, after he smashes me, but, you know, he gives me gems, you know, and yeah. it's like, dude, thank you.
I'll beat your ass and then help you out
yes,
afterwards.
Exactly.
That's a really...
And it's made me progress as a person and in martial arts as well, incredibly.
It will. And if you think about somebody like Vic, right? So I'm going to pick on Vic for just a minute. Vic is a 19-year-old kid.
Fuck you.
Right? He's legit a kid.
You're 19?
He's 19. Yeah. He's not even 20. So he can't even legally drink yet.
Scary-ass 19-year-old. He's so scary.
But the thing is that we've got people like me. I'm 42 years old, right? So you would think that I would have this vast knowledge and blah, blah, blah. The reality is I can learn so much from Vic. Mm-hmm. He's been doing it longer than I have. He's better than I am. But I think that even as a blue belt or a purple belt or even brown belts, like they have the ability to learn because Vic's out learning new things, right? He's watching, he's constantly sending me shit from Instagram telling me to do it. And it's usually wild, stupid
dude,
shit.
Dude, it's not even like, and that's not even like the real shit that I will pass.
But that's how to work. That's the stuff that he sees and watches. And I think the acumen gets more and more, right? So now I can see not only was that a cool thing to watch, like mm-hmm. it looked cool, but you start to pick apart the technique of how it got done and you right. translate that. And learning things from people like Vic who are young, the age is irrelevant at that point, right? It's the knowledge that he's built over the years of doing this and the study that he's put into it. And I don't think everybody recognizes that. And I think a lot of people are closed off to listening to people and not necessarily Vic individually, but people like Vic who are young in the sport. But you look at the guys that are dominating right now, the Rotolo brothers.
Yeah.
What are they, mm-hmm. like 18, 19 years old?
Yeah, 18, yeah. 19.
I mean, they're super young. Mm-hmm. These guys are going out and wrecking shop.
Yeah.
Like at a local tournament, they could potentially be in the teens division.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is you got to realize, like me, I started back when I was 11.
Yeah.
The Rotolo brothers, they started when they were 6.
Right.
I mean, all these younger kids who started back when jiu-jitsu was at that kind of crossroad where it was still underground, but not underground enough to where they couldn't teach kids. I mean, my buddy Zane, I don't know how long he's been doing it, but he just had his third MMA fight and won it yesterday.
Yeah.
And absolutely smoked the guy when it came to being on the ground and on the wall. I mean, and even for me, like, I sometimes you'll talk to me like, well, you need to do this, this, and that. And I look at you and I'm like, no. And then I tell you like why and what you should do. And then you're like, oh, like that, even for me, that's weird. Cause it's like, damn, Nick's 40 and I like a damn child has to give him advice. Like that's weird.
But I think to the point that Dylan just made, it's not about being right, wrong, or, you know, it's about hearing the other side. And I think we don't do that in life. And I think you right. said it transcends into your everyday life.
Absolutely.
We don't listen to people because we have this thought of they're too young. They're not experienced enough. They haven't been here. I've been here before. And while there's a lot of validity to that, there's also a lot of validity to an opposing point. Like, even if you're wrong, I still want to hear why you think what you think.
Right.
And I want to walk through that with you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say you're wrong or you're right. I want to walk through the thought process.
Right. How'd you get there?
Yeah. Help me understand why are you there and I'm here? Because mm-hmm. we're probably both right in some regard, but there's also something in there that we can each learn from each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, you think about some of the challenges that the country's going through right now
sure.
and the world is going through, race relations and things like that, where these people just have these staunch opinions and they're not open to even listening to what the other person's saying. Mm-hmm. And that's when you get into situations where you become ignorant and you become dumb quickly. I don't care if it's in you know, your personal life, your work life, in martial arts. And I think that's a lot of what I learned. And it sounds like, you know, where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Just listen. Listen yeah. to what people say.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, dude's fucking nuts.
Well, it's an ego check, right? That's why it's so hard to listen. You got to put your ego aside.
Yeah. I mean, as a grown adult who literally could be Vic's dad, like yeah. I'm literally old enough to be his father, there's still yeah, things that I can old. Learn from him.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's legit. I can absolutely. And if I don't, I'm missing an opportunity.
Sure.
And I think it's the same for any of us that if we don't listen, at least listen to what the other person's saying, mm-hmm. you're missing an opportunity to learn something potentially.
Exactly.
Even if you don't agree with it, there's knowledge there.
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I think we've covered a lot of the questions. There's one that I have to ask.
Okay.
Are you going to keep training after this fight? Is this something that you want to continue to go on into perpetuity? Do you think you're going to have another break? You got a kid on the way. You're going to get married. Like all this life stuff's about to happen to you.
Sure.
What do you think is going to happen to your training schedule?
I think I'm going to start doing jiu-jitsu.
Yeah?
Well, I'm going to add that. Like, meaning I'm going to train more. Like gi jiu-jitsu.
So I think so. I'm excited to see how that goes for two reasons. One, I want to play with you in a gi, but two, the baby's going to change everything.
Nah, the baby's going to be wearing a gi like after a month.
I love it.
If he's training gi, so is the baby.
No, like I said, I have an incredible support system. So I have a rule. Fighting is something that I pursue, and it will go as long as it goes. I'll take it as high as it goes, not for the pursuit of being the UFC champion. If it goes there, great, you know. But again, I'm doing it for a psychological experiment. I'm doing it to challenge, you know, those emotions. I like to test them. I'm forced to contend with my emotions daily, on a high level, which I really love. It's jiu-jitsu for your emotions. You have to keep those tame, and you have to keep them in check, and you have to understand them, because I have a daughter on the way, man. She's going to have a lot of emotions her whole life, and I'm going to have to be able to relate and empathize and talk to her and talk her through it, you know? And to me, that's where I find it. So I will do it as far as I can go.
That's awesome.
And training wise will never stop. That's for sure. It's too valuable. It's too valuable, being a part of that community and learning martial arts. It's just too valuable to ever stop. So I think I'll add some stuff. I'll add some gi training after this fight, because it'll only expand, you know, my my knowledge, excuse me, for the game, which I love. And I will take a fight again immediately as soon as, given that there's no, you know, suspensions in regards to like knockouts, injuries, cuts, things like that. So if I don't have any suspensions, I'll take a fight immediately. But so that way, you know, you're perpetually in camp, but you're in relatively great shape all the time. And then that way I almost have more time in that sense to put on a gi, you know. It doesn't really take away, because I'm so prepared.
Weight cut the things that you have to get through in camp. I think that's awesome. So one of the things we ask everybody that we haven't gotten to yet, because I think we got to a lot of different questions that we typically ask, but I think, you know, one of the things that I'm curious is your advice to the person who's looking to start. They walk into that that Jackson gym, and they see the dude that's all jacked up, and they got the messed up mug and the busted ears.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is a bit much. I don't think I'm ready for this. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give them to get starting, get over that initial hurdle of that kind of anxiety?
First of all, make that experience, that first time experience, happen as many times as possible. I.e., like you said earlier, go to different gyms, right? Because you'll get really good at finding that scary guy and approaching him.
Yeah.
You know, asking him for advice. Take the scariest dude with the black belt and just ask if he can roll and say, I know nothing. You know, I that was always my approach. I know nothing. Can we roll? You know, like, I wrestled for a year in high school, but I know it doesn't matter here, you know, like, I just want to, like, and going with, like I said, like, Jordan grabbing me, like, right away, that's, like, when you can find or test yourself like that, just socially, it's just a social test, that's all it is. It's not scary. These people aren't going to hurt you. They look scary, but they're the nicest people on earth, so approach them, right? So that's why I'm saying that you can manufacture that experience multiple times just by going to a different gym, then find the one you're going to commit to, but definitely go make that experience happen more than once, because it's cool.
I think that's funny. So the Kumite, I was talking to Zach Shelley. He puts on the Kumite. Mm-hmm. And we have it at the Madison Theater in Covington. So again, quick shout out, May 1st, Covington. But he was telling me that the security there was absolutely shit scared of the crowd.
See, nothing but cauliflower.
Yeah, honestly, like,
the security guy's legit.
I feel like at some point, do you really need security?
You do. Remember the fight that broke out in the middle of Naga?
That's a good point.
The Fuji? I guess. I don't know, man, but I feel like if there's a fight going on,
there's enough people there.
Yeah, there's enough people there to where, like, okay, well, the crowd is going to shift from the actual matches to the fight and then break up the fight.
Well, so it was hysterical. So he's telling me this. He's like, yeah, dude, the security guards came up to me and they're like, hey, so just to let you know, if some shit goes down, we're not getting in the middle of it. What am I going to do with it? Which is funny, because there was somebody who had a bit too much to drink and got a little belligerent and started screaming and yelling. And I'm looking around going, where the fuck are the security guards? Like, is anybody going to say anything to this guy? No, nobody did. So I just walked up to him like, hey, tapped him on the shoulder. Dude, you got to come back here. Like, you got to chill. And again, the community that we're part of, 90% of the people in that community are like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize being a dick.
Yeah.
And they'll just like back off of it, right? Like, they're not going to be confrontational, because we get to be confrontational every day on the mat.
Yes.
We don't have to be confrontational out in public. Yeah. And you don't know who you're looking at.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know, other than the busted up ears.
Yeah.
And Vic can't seem to get
I know, dude. Here. I'm like the least intimidating person.
He really is.
Like, if you see me on the street,
With his Callaway hat on, his Nike shirt. You're like, what a douche. And then all of a sudden he just drops to his butt and kicks your ass.
Yeah.
But no, I think there's, you know, that exists everywhere, is that intimidation factor. And all of a sudden you realize that was not all that scary at all.
Right.
But I think we romanticized it in our heads from watching like Fight Pass and watching the Fight House and all this stuff. We got these type A personalities that are just ready to go with a drop of a hat.
Yeah.
That's edited as shit.
That's the important distinguish because those are high level athletes.
Well, and
they're psychos.
It's not all right either. Like a lot of that's edited.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm just saying, like, that's a different thing. That's not jiu-jitsu. That's not a gym, right? That's a high level athlete. Yeah. That's you got to separate that. We're normal.
I don't know if I go that far. We're not quite normal.
But these people are pleasant. They're very, very pleasant. And if you want a pleasant experience, definitely, like I said, make it happen. You know,
I think that's great. That's great.
Make it happen multiple times.
Yeah. And I think to your point of the psychological portion, mm-hmm. I think that's 90% of jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And I think it's sports in general, right? But in jiu-jitsu, it's psychological. You get in somebody's side control and they're super big and super heavy and have great weight control.
Right.
Dude, that just, it's the thought of, can I get out of here? I can't right now. I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Do I give up?
Yeah.
Or do I keep going?
Right.
And that's when you start to really test yourself. And Ked does this. We roll for like 15 minutes.
I mean,
oh my God.
His pressure is so insane.
Well, and I remember one point I had a frame on his hip and there was no weight on it at all. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to do something better with this hand. And I went for a ghost escape and all of a sudden his hip just dropped onto my face. And I was like, oh, I guess that was load bearing, son of a bitch. But then we talked about it after. He was like, yeah, well, I felt your hand leave and I knew I could put my hip down. I was like, yeah, you see, close the fucking door. Black belts, they do that kind of shit all the time.
Yeah, right.
So this was so much fun, Dylan. Real quick, where can people find you? Because you got a fight coming up here on B2 pretty quick.
No, Aries.
Aries, I'm sorry.
Aries fight Series 7.
Yep. And when's that?
May 6th.
Awesome. So how can people find you? How can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Relentless Dylan Vowell. That's the only social media I have other than Facebook. That's just my name. Awesome. Dylan Vowell, V as in Victor. Not Vowell. That'd be unfortunate. Be very unfortunate last name.
It was, but they changed it.
Yeah.
So for sure, if you want to follow Dylan, again, Paper Street, Paper ST Street Coffee.
Correct.
And then the other one is
Paper Street Coffee and Driveway Dumpsters. If you're in the greater Cincinnati area and you need to throw away some crap, call Driveway Dumpsters. Let them know Dylan sent you.
Drop them off there. Guys, this has been a ton of fun. Dylan, thank you for your time today. This has been a blast. Love to hear your story, your journey.
Thank you. Excited
to see where you go from here. Excited to get you in a gi in a few weeks.
Can't wait.
And get back on the mats at it. So thanks.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Vic. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Hey, everybody else, listen up. Again, Kumite coming up May 1st. Make sure you're there. We're going to have some sweet gear specifically for the Kumite. We had it made just for the Kumite, so we're really excited about that. And we're going to have some cool stuff go down. There's actually two more Kumites happening after that, so we'll be a part of all three of those Kumites. But come to all of them because it's going to be a blast. And with that, guys, have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Peace out.